Hello, and welcome to Opus on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Gretchen Gondek, and today we're going to be hearing about one of the concerts in the Morningside College piano recital series, and we have in studio Xixiao Zhang. Hello.
Hello.
And welcome. Nice to
Thank
have you.
You
here.
Thank you for having me.
And we have Stephanie March, who is a cellist.
Hi, in
the Sioux City Symphony
Thank you
Orchestra.
For having us.
Well, this is very exciting. And Stephanie, I've always wanted to get you in the production studio for many years. So for me, this is a real delight. We, of course, know your parents, James mm-hmm. and Catherine. You grew up in the musical life. What are some
yes.
of your earliest recollections of music at home?
Well, I remember I was born and grew up in Sioux City, Iowa. Both of my parents, Catherine and James March, are both pianists who are on the faculty at Morningside College. And actually, I'm also on the faculty at Morningside College part-time. So I grew up with a lot of piano music in the house. There's many keyboard instruments in our house. And my parents would always take me to symphony concerts as I was growing up. And I always gravitated towards the low strings, the cellos and basses. And my parents always loved to tell the story. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but they say that when I was 18 months old, I started begging for a cello. And they brought home a violin one day for me to try. And apparently, so they say, I picked it up and tried to play it like a cello and told them, this isn't a cello, and threw it on the bed and stormed out of the room. That's a running joke in our family. So I eventually began playing the cello when I was 3 years old, and I started studying with Mr. Joseph Shufro, who for a long time also taught on the faculty at Morningside College and was principal cello with the Sioux City Symphony at that time. So that was where I really got my start. And then I grew up playing in the youth orchestras in Sioux City with the Sioux City Symphonette and then the Siouxland Youth Symphony, which was a great experience. And grew up listening to this radio station as well. So
we love hearing
so
that.
So appreciate everything you do for this community. And then I went to Nodland Elementary School and Mater Dei Middle School. And then I eventually went on to high school at Helan High School. And when I was about 11 or 12, I think, I auditioned for the Sioux City Symphony. And that's when I began playing the Sioux City Symphony there under, at the time it was Stephen Rogers Radcliffe. And that was a wonderful experience for me and sort of where I started getting my love for orchestral music. And at that time, I was also studying, at age 11, I began studying with Mr. Peter Howard. I would commute up to Minnesota for lessons with him about once every 2 or 3 weeks. And at the time, he was the principal cellist with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. So that also gave me a great appreciation for cello and orchestral music and performing in general. So, yeah.
And we want to, again, welcome Xixiao to the studios. And how is it that the two of you met and developed this musical relationship?
Mm-hmm. May I?
Yes.
We went to Eastman School of Music in the same year. That was 2007. Mm-hmm. We came into the school as freshmen, and I was from China, from Beijing. And back then, I didn't speak much English that year. Well, Stephanie remembers that. and I remember in freshman year, every student was required to enroll in chamber music, which is very important. And Stephanie and I and another friend, we formed a trio together and started practicing performing that year. And we just found that our musical ideas are very similar. Our tastes are similar. It's very easy to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's not my first time in Sioux City. Actually, we've performed. Which year was that?
I think it was 2016.
Yeah.
But Yeah, just like Shicha was saying, we both went to Eastman School of Music for our undergrad, which is in Rochester, New York. And when we were looking for chamber groups, I remember hearing Shicha play, and he's such a fantastic person to work with, and I was inspired by his playing, so thought to myself, I have to find a way to be in a chamber group with him. So we got a trio together, and that's when we first started playing together. Yeah. But we always thought it would be great to have a chance to do a duo recital together, and we had our first chance to do that here in Sioux City in 2016. That was our first duo recital, and this will be our second official duo recital this weekend. So,
tell us a little bit about growing up in China. And I'm very curious to know, I'm fascinated by China and growing up in non-Western music. What was your introduction to Western music? And obviously you must come from a musical family.
Actually,
no.
Not.
No.
My parents are music lovers, very enthusiastic music lovers. They love music. My dad kind of taught himself to play some violin, very basic violin playing. But none of them are professional musician. I started around age 5, but started not with a piano, not with a real piano, but my first thing was an electronic keyboard. That was a gift for my like 5th birthday or something, and I loved it and started learning. And then I didn't get my real piano until age 10, another birthday present from my parents. And then, well, piano has been probably the most popular Western instrument in not only China, but in the whole world. Mm-hmm. I always fascinated by the rich sound that the piano can produce. And so I formally started my real piano lessons at around age 10. And I took piano lessons in Beijing, and I was in the music middle and high school for 6 years in Beijing. Was surrounded by the great Western tradition of music, by teachers, friends, and the great concerts in Beijing. And when I was in about 10th or 11th grade, I heard about Eastman School of Music from my piano teacher. And I met my current professor in China, who was giving a master class, and I thought, this is the person I'm hoping to study with, and I auditioned, and then I'm here. Yeah.
And did you, Stephanie, did you reference the piano competition 2 years ago, the Iowa piano competition?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That was after we were no longer in school anymore. Well, Shichao was actually finishing up his doctorate at Eastman right now, but last year, or was it 2016, when we had the Iowa piano competition, Shichao applied for that and made it into the final 12 people for that. And actually, I think you placed
sixth place.
Yes, in that competition, so he got to come back here for that as well. So this is his 4th trip to Sioux City?
Yes, it is.
since about 2014. He gave a solo recital here on the series in 2014. And then we'll have given 2 duo recitals as well.
Yeah. I always tell Stephanie and Mr. and Mrs. March that Sioux City is my second home in the States.
Yes. Well, having been to the March home, I know it's very welcoming there, and it's so fascinating because there's all these keyboard instruments that Dr. March built from scratch.
Right.
Actually,
I've witnessed one spinet that he started building when I think that was the second during my second trip.
Yes,
and now
so
it's complete.
He's seen the project in process in the past few years.
When you were growing up, Stephanie, did you think that everybody had somebody who built harpsichords and forte pianos in their home? It was.
I think I got very used to having keyboard instruments everywhere. My parents liked to tease me that when I was a little kid, I was around so much piano music that I started cello when I was 3 and piano when I was 4. But I kept begging for a cello, and they wanted me to play piano, and I told them, I like piano, but I want to play a real instrument. Because I was so used to having pianos everywhere, I thought everyone played the piano, but later learned that wasn't the case. But I was
to be special.
I was very grateful to have piano in my background, because it's a very helpful thing to have. So,
well, as you mentioned, this is your second formal performance together.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we want to mention to our listeners, they can attend this. And I believe it's completely free and open to the public.
Yes, all of the concerts on the series are free to the public, which we're very proud to be able to do that.
So. Absolutely. And it's this Saturday at Eppley Auditorium at 7:30. You can just show up and enjoy a wonderful program. Speaking of the program, this is a collaborative process when you put a program together. So tell us how that happened with this program, and what is on the program.
Do you want to start?
We're discussing things. I think we started talking about the possibility of doing another recital together late last spring. And then around about June, we started discussing possible repertoire for this particular concert. And the first thing on our program is the Lucas Foss Capriccio, which is a short piece. Lucas Foss was born in 1922. He lived 1922 to 2009, so it's somewhat of a contemporary work, but it's still quite neoclassical. It's tonal, and it almost has a cowboyish flavor to it. You can hear remnants of Copland-like rhythms, and it's a really fun piece. So that's one of the pieces that we'll be playing. And do you want to add anything?
Well, we try to have as many variety of styles and pieces from different composers as possible. So like Stephanie just mentioned, we're going to start the concert with Lucas Foss Capriccio, and then we're going to have two full sonatas by Beethoven and Rachmaninoff. So we have one German, one Russian piece, and they're the big substantial pieces of this concert. The Beethoven sonata, the fifth sonata, is his last cello and piano sonata, and it's written around 1815, which is towards Beethoven's last the late period of Beethoven. And as a pianist, the most challenging movement is the third movement, which is a fugue. I guess it's not only for me, but for us.
Yes.
It's a complete fugue through the movement.
It's a bit of a puzzle to piece together, which is it's a lot of fun to rehearse.
Right, and the Rachmaninoff, this is like, Gretchen, like you just introduced, that is our second performance. And in our first performance, we played that the Chopin piano and cello sonata. This Rachmaninoff was a great, great composer and also pianist, mm-hmm. who performed many piano works by Chopin. And I'm not sure if Rachmaninoff never ever performed this, performed Chopin cello sonata. There's no recording of that, but we do find some similarity or influence in this Rachmaninoff cello sonata by the Chopin cello sonata. So I wanted sort of like, it's like the continuation or something from our first performance together.
Yes.
This Rachmaninoff sonata is in G minor and 4 movements. It's it's very technically challenging for both cellist and pianist. And
especially for the pianist, who we like to joke that, well, actually, when Rachmaninoff wrote it, rather than calling it a cello sonata, he wrote it as the sonata in G minor for cello and piano, because the piano has such a virtuosic part to this. But you'll hear, as Shichao was saying, a lot of similarities to the Chopin sonata, which we played a couple of years ago. But Rachmaninoff lived from about 1873 to 1943. You'll also hear a lot of similarities in this particular sonata to many of his piano works. It was completed shortly after he wrote his second piano concerto, and it was after a very difficult time in his life. He had a fairly disastrous premiere of his first symphony. It got panned by a lot of critics, and it really put him into a dark place, and there were several years where he almost didn't write anything at all. And he actually began going to hypnotherapy sessions with a therapist.
Right.
And this hypnotherapist, Dr. Nicolay Dahl, actually helped him overcome his composing block. And it was after that when he composed the Rachmaninoff, the piano and cello sonata. And it was for one of his very best friends, who was the cellist, I think his last name was Brandukov. And so it's sort of fitting that Shichao and I are such great friends, and Rachmaninoff actually premiered this work with one of his dearest friends, who was a cellist as well. And this sonata happened to also be the last chamber work that he ever composed. So it's a very special piece, and I think you'll hear that.
Well, I think it's interesting you talked about the Beethoven as being a very late sonata.
Yes.
Did he write 5 sonatas for cello and piano?
Yes.
So, and then this is the last chamber work composed by Rachmaninoff. Was that it? Was that just a coincidence, or was that in your thinking?
I don't know if we consciously knew that at the time that we picked the pieces. They're both phenomenal pieces. The last recital that we played, we chose a romantic work and a classical work. We had a different Beethoven sonata on our last recital too. It's nice to have different styles to balance out the program. But it is interesting that this particular Beethoven sonata was his last cello sonata as well. And it was also after kind of a dark period in his life too, with the death of his brother, and I think he was embroiled in a custody battle for his nephew at the time, and his nephew Carl had tried to commit suicide, and there were a number of dark things happening in his life at the time, and as you know, he also was battling with his hearing loss. And
right, and he was completely isolated from the society. He wasn't able to communicate with people until 1818, probably February 1818, where his very first, what we call conversation book, was found. And he had 139 conversation books left that he would write down. People would write down what they want to talk with him, and then he would respond from reading what people write. So around 1815, that time when he composed this sonata, he was completely isolated by the society, or partially because of himself. He didn't want people to realize that he cannot hear anything as a musician. So it's kind of a very difficult time. And I guess we hear some of that from the third movement of the sonata. We're in the fugue. It started off with simple, very simple scale-like passage, and then the intricacy, the complexity and the intricacy of the fugue really brings the difficulty and the sort of trouble for both performers. And then it sort of out to the end.
There's a real poetic complexity to that movement, I think.
Yes.
We have the CD queued up, and I'm not sure which track you have the jacket cover. So I know it's a difficult choice, but from the three movements sonata, can we hear one of the movements, and which one will that be?
Well, before we listen to the CD, let me just add one little comment about sonatas, that it has three movements, and each movement is so distinctive from the others. Mm-hmm. First movement being a very traditional sonata form, where it states what the characteristic of this sonata is. And the second movement has that lyricism in it, and the really deep emotion in the second movement. And the third movement is what we've been talking about, is that fugue.
Yes. There's a certain joyousness to it as well. It's in D major.
Mm-hmm.
And one other tiny little interesting tidbit, I think, is that this particular sonata was also dedicated to a good friend of his who was a countess, and a cellist who lived on her estate premiered this sonata, but that same cellist, Joseph Link, also happened to be the cellist in the Razumovsky String Quartet, which was the quartet that premiered a number of Beethoven's string quartets, those Opus 59 string quartets, which are often dubbed the Razumovsky String Quartet because of the quartet that premiered them. That cellist also premiered this sonata. So that's an interesting mm-hmm. note as well. Perhaps since we've talked about the fugue so much, it would be nice to hear that.
So it's track 11.
Track 11. Okay, we will hear now. Is this the Allegro?
This is, yes, the final movement.
From the Sonata Number 5 in D major.
Sonata Number 5.
All right. And that's track?
11.
11. Thank you. the final movement of the Sonata No. 5 in D Major, Opus 102, No. 2 of Beethoven. And if you're just joining us, Gretchen Gondek here for Opus, and very privileged to have Shi Chao Zhang, pianist, and cellist Stephanie March in studio today talking about their program, which is coming up on Saturday, October 6th, Epley Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. Well, we're back, and you have produced the music score here, Stephanie, which I'm very impressed.
Taking a look at it as we listen to the recording.
Right, right. So we were talking about the Beethoven,
yes.
And I'm not a musician, but to me there was some very kind of jolly and jovial moments in that concluding movement.
Yes, for sure. But if we go back to the second movement, which is right before what we just heard, it's such emotionally deep and sentimental movement, mm-hmm. Where I always felt that this movement has many operatic elements in it. We probably know that Beethoven was not such a successful opera composer. He did compose one, and unfortunately, the premiere was failed around 1802 or 1804. It wasn't a successful premiere, and he revised it for almost a decade. And finally, the performance was successful in 1814. That's probably his the peak of his career, not long after Napoleon's defeat. And he wrote pieces for that huge event, and also wrote pieces for the Vienna conference. And the opera was successful eventually, and he did not write another opera ever since. But in this movement, it's so touching, sentimental, and the tune at the very beginning from cello, it just reminds me an aria in the opera. And what's different in this movement is that the piano is not merely an accompaniment to the cello part, but two instruments are talking with each other, mm-hmm. are intertwined, and
there's a lot of passing back and forth of phrases. And to go off what you were saying about it being operatic, it does really showcase the cello's vocal capabilities, I feel. Mm-hmm. And especially in the opening, it's sort of sectioned into three parts. The opening and the ending of this movement are very slow, almost dirge-like, like a chorale. And the individual phrases have very abrupt endings, and oftentimes the cello will have a very slow phrase, which is interspersed with the question and answer by the piano.
Yes.
And then there's a very nostalgic, beautiful middle section to this movement.
Right. It's just two instruments are communicating. And that's exactly what we want from this recital, is to communicate between ourselves on the stage and communicating with the audience, and also this second movement is intimate and it's personal, it's touching, with the deep emotion.
Shall we hear then the second movement of the Sonata No. 5 in D Major, Opus 102, No. 2 of Beethoven?
Thank you.
We've been listening to the music of Beethoven and a movement from the Sonata No. 5 in D major, Opus 102, No. 2. And that will be on the program this Saturday night as part of the Morningside College Piano Recital Series. And again, back to our guests in studio. And my goodness, it's been such a privilege to have Shichao Zhang, pianist, and Stephanie March here in studio talking about their recital on Saturday night. And that leaves us with a little bit of time to talk about the next work, and that's the Rachmaninoff. And I think we decided we're going to be hearing the last movement from that. So can you set this up for us?
Stephanie, me? Well, we very briefly talked about this Rachmaninoff sonata at the beginning of this today. Well, just for me, I think it's a four-movement sonata, and it's a transcending experience whenever I listen to this, or practice, or rehearse this piece. The first movement is set up to the tone for the whole thing, and second movement shows kind of the anxiety of the piece, if I may use that word. Well, absolutely for the pianist, yes. It's very technically challenging, but I think there's a kind of both scherzo-like and anxiety in it. Mm-hmm. And the third movement...
So it's almost concerto-like for the pianist.
What people joke that this is a piano concerto.
If we were counting the number of notes each of us had to play, he would win.
No doubt. And the third movement is a movement that everyone loves. It's the slow movement.
Yes, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yes, and it's the movement that draw our attention to this piece and made us want to perform the whole thing.
It's the only movement we had performed together before this recital.
Yes, so. as it was as an encore.
Yes, yeah,
the movement alone, and the last movement is moving from G minor to G major in the last movement, and sort of like the Beethoven influence, where Beethoven moves from C minor to C major in his Fifth Symphony, the most famous one, that symphony. And so we're in G major. It's kind of the, like I said, the more transcending experience towards the end.
Yeah.
It's more celebrating than anxious.
It almost feels like after all of the first three movements in minor, when it changes to major for that last movement, you just really feel that energy. It feels like a heroic romp to the finish line almost. So it's a very exciting movement.
Yes.
Well, shall we hear it now?
Yes, we shall.
And this is Rachmaninoff's Allegro Mosso from the Sonata in G minor for cello and piano, Opus 19. Thank you. The last movement of the Sonata in G Minor for Cello and Piano, Opus 19 of Rachmaninoff. You will hear that performed on Saturday evening at Epley Auditorium at 7:30 with the very talented duo of Shi Chao Zhang, pianist, and cellist Stephanie March, who just happened to have carved out an hour of time from their very busy schedule to be on Opus today. And I've just enjoyed this immensely.
Thank you for having us.
We really appreciate it. And back to, I think, a really fun way to end the program, and that's with a piece of music by David Popper.
Yes. So after the Faust, Beethoven, and Rachmaninoff, we will be ending with a short little piece by David Popper called Elfentanz, which is Dance of the Elves. Initially, we wanted to save that for a possible encore piece because it really is a fun show piece, but we enjoyed it so much that we decided we had to list it officially on our program. David Popper lived from about 1843 to 1913. He was actually born in a Jewish ghetto of Prague. And since he lived in poverty for the beginning of his life, he never forgot those difficult conditions he grew up with as a child. Popper's father was actually a cantor, and he was the religious leader who sung prayers in their synagogue. And so at a very young age, Popper began to imitate his father's singing in his compositions. And as he grew up, he was principal cellist of the Vienna Court Opera. And he also studied with the famed cello pedagogue Julius Goltermann, who Goltermann wrote a number of cello concerti throughout his life as well that oftentimes they get labeled as student compositions, but they're fabulous compositions in their own right. And his student Popper went on to be principal cellist of the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra. And he also studied, or he also taught, rather, at National Hungarian Royal Academy of Music. He was appointed in 1886 by Franz Liszt, another great composer. Another interesting little tidbit about Popper was he was actually one of the last great cellists who did not use an end pin. So he was one of the last holdouts to perform on a cello that had no end pin. He was a prolific composer of cello music. He wrote four concerti, a requiem for three cellos and orchestra, and nearly 70 different character and salon pieces for the cello, such as what we'll be playing, Elfentanz, which translates Dance of the Elves. He also wrote a tarantella, spinning song, Hungarian rhapsody, and he's fairly well known for his high school of cello playing, which is a book of about 40 cello etudes that is very frequently used for cellists coming up through music conservatories and such. Great teaching pieces, but also very virtuosic. Much of Popper's music calls for a great degree of virtuosity, such as the piece that we'll be ending our program with, which is Dance of the Elves. You can really almost imagine elves dancing throughout this piece. It's a very fast work, and the cello has, I think the entire piece practically is continuous 16th notes, so very perpetual motion and lots of very virtuosic. It goes extremely high on the cello. I think at a certain point you'll see my fingers completely leave the fingerboard. I'll be closer to the bridge than the fingerboard at near the end of the piece, but it's a lot of fun, and
and on the contrary, this is totally different from the Rachmaninoff Sonata, where in Popper, the piano part is easy. it's also fun to watch rather than listening. It's also fun to watch how Stephanie is playing, with so many notes in per second, and I'm sitting at the piano pretty chill and play chords and listening and looking at her. Yeah.
You get to have fun listening to Shi Chao's virtuosity and the Rachmaninoff, and then I get to have my showpiece at the end. So,
well, that sounds like
a lot of fun.
A lot of fun to finish the program. We have just a couple of minutes, and now the million-dollar question. I'll give you each just a few seconds to answer this if you can. Ooh. Stephanie and Shi Chao, what's ahead for you at this point in your life, musically speaking? What's next?
In a few seconds? Mm-hmm. It is hard. It is really hard to answer. Well, I'm finishing my doctoral degree at Eastman School of Music. It's tough to decide what's happening next, but no matter what it is, it will be about music. I love performing. I love play solo recitals and concertos and chamber music, and like those duo recitals. I love to teach. I love to share what I know about music to younger people, our potential audience, and the next generation, and
Well, we wish you all the best. It's been just an honor to have you here today.
My honor. Thank you, Gretchen.
And Stephanie?
Well, this year, after the recital, I'll be continuing to do some of my own private teaching, and I also teach part-time at Morningside College. And you'll also be able to see me throughout the year. I'll be principal cellist with the Sioux City Symphony throughout the year, which I'm really looking forward to. As always, it's such great fun to have Shichao here and get to do duo recitals together. Since we live so far apart, we rarely get to see each other. So hopefully you'll see us doing more performing together in the future. And really looking forward to this weekend.
And we will look forward to your recital as part of the Morningside College Piano Recital Series, free of charge, open to the public, Saturday, October the 6th at Epley Auditorium at 7:30. All the very best to both of you. It has been absolutely delightful. Please come back and let's do this again.
Oh, likewise. Thank you.
This is Gretchen Gondek for Opus. Thank you for tuning in. And you're tuned to Siouxland Public Media, KWIT Sioux City 90.3, and KOJI Okoboji 90.7, broadcasting from the campus of Western Iowa Tech Community College.